And where is your family?
In India.
Where?
Mumbai.
And you're here alone?
No. I'm here with my family.
Huh?
In Mumbai.
They're there. But you are here by yourself?
Yeah.
For how long?
I came 6 months, 6, 7 weeks back.
So you're all alone?
No, I'm staying with my parents in Mandela.
In where?
Mandela.
Uh-huh. You have friends there?
Yeah.
Have you been away from your family before?
No.
I didn't think so. Difficult? Yes, I think so. Your mother cooks at home?
Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
I'll be back on
18
May.
Huh?
I'll be back.
You're going back then?
18 May. Just here for 3 months.
Some work or holiday?
Holiday.
In Australia, there's no people. Where are all the people?
A very less populated country.
Yes. What part of Bombay are you from?
Pardon?
What part of Bombay? What part of Bombay? Of Mumbai?
Santa Cruz, near Bombay.
Santa Cruz, yeah.
Near the temple. Yeah.
I know Santa Cruz. Train station.
Yeah. Santa Cruz.
Om Ganatamananda Sajana Jana Sulakaya Chaksu Sunatan Jaina Tasma Sri Rave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manabhistam Stapitam Dena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sapanantikam. Vansha Kalpa Chubhascha Kripa Sindhu Vaya Vaja Paditanam Pabhanevu Vaishmaya Namaha. We've been hearing about the saga that's going on between Indra and his losing his spiritual masters, gaining Vishwarup as a priest, his killing Vishwarup, and Vishwarup's father, Trusta, creating from a sacrifice an incredibly powerful asura named Vritrasura. And Vritrasura gave the devas, the demigods, headed by Indra, so much trouble that they approached Lord Narayan and began praying to him. Lord Narayan gave them advice. They wanted him to personally come as an incarnation, avatar. But he advised them in a different way. He told them to beg, something actually quite incredible, to make a weapon, a vajra, thunderbolt weapon, made from the body of Dadichi. Now how would they get that body to make the thunderbolt weapon? They would ask him for it. They would beg it from him. He was a sage, a sadhu. And the very nature of a holy person is that his interest is in doing good for others, even if it means inconvenience for himself. So they asked Dadichi for the thing that is most dear to everyone, their own body. They asked him for his body upon the advice of Lord Vishnu. Ah, Daddy, no. You need chatter? I don't need it. It's so hot. Oh, sorry. Didn't quite make it. So they asked him for his body and he delivered it, preaching very incredibly about the importance of self-sacrifice for the benefit of others. It's such a concept that who speak about this in today's world. Everyone is interested just in amassing more and more fortune for themselves. And the more people do that, the more people get more selfish, self-centered, the more miserable they become. And then they think, well, the cause of my unhappiness is I don't have enough. And then they add more. But actually, the teacher preached so powerfully and so sweetly. And not only did he preach, but he acted according to his words. It's easy to preach. But then when someone asks you for something, oh, no, 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 I can't do it. But the teacher preached and acted on such a high platform. And he fixed his mind upon Krishna. And through yogic powers, he left this world. So Indra then fashioned the Vajra weapon, had Vishwakarma fashion this Vajra weapon, and then immediately he and the other demigods attacked the demons, the army of the demons. And the demons, demonic armies, were so powerful. And they immediately attacked back, and they threw their weapons, and their weapons, volleyed one after another, were completely ineffective, and the demigods got them back. The demigods just repelled them, and they didn't hurt the weapons of the demons. The asuras didn't hurt the demigods at all. So the demons then became frightened, and they began to flee from the battlefield. And Vritrasura saw them fleeing, even though he was their commander, he was on their side, and he chastised them so strongly. He said, what is more glorious than dying on the battlefield? Because there are two ways. Krishna also explains this in the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter. That if a kshatriya dies on the battlefield, because kshatriyas are warriors, they're not philosophical like the brahmanas. But if they act based on the philosophy that they are not the body, that they are souls, if they are fearless in acting in that way, they gain the perfect result. They gain such purification and elevation. Incredibly so. So Vritrasura preached to his fleeing glorious warriors that were fleeing right before him to stand and fight. What can be the loss? But fear, unfortunately, had overtaken them. And then Vritrasura was standing before the demigod warriors. But before that, we're starting to read from chapter 11, text 1. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, Vritrasura, the commander in chief of the demons, advised his lieutenants in the principles of religion. In other words, don't flee. But the cowardly demoniac commanders, intent upon fleeing the battlefield, were so disturbed by fear that they could not accept his words. O King Parikit, the demigods, taking advantage of a favorable opportunity presented by time, attacked the army of the demons from the rear and began driving away the demoniac soldiers, scattering them here and there as if their armies had no leader. Their army had no leader. Seeing the pitiable condition of his soldiers, Vritrasura, the best of the asuras, who was called Indrashatru, the enemy of Indra, was very much aggrieved. Unable to tolerate such reverses, he stopped and forcibly rebuked the demigods. He had just rebuked the asuras, the demoniac soldiers who were fleeing from the battlefield on his side, and those soldiers were being attacked by the demigods from behind, and now he's going to rebuke and chastise the demigods, speaking the following words in an angry mood. O demigods, these demoniac soldiers, the ones who are fleeing, the asuras, have taken birth uselessly. Indeed, they have come out of the bodies of their mothers exactly like stool. What is the benefit of killing such enemies from behind while they are running in fear? One who considers himself a hero should not kill an enemy who is afraid of losing his life. Such killing is never glorious, nor can it promote one to the heavenly planets. So now, he had chastised the demonic warriors for acting irreligiously. And now, he is chastising the demigods in the same way for acting irreligiously, because according to the etiquette on war, of war, that one should never flee the battlefield, but if one turns his back and flees, it is improper for a warrior to kill him. The etiquette was so strong that if one warrior had equal weapons to the other warrior, then they would fight. But if one had a bow and an arrow and the other one had something not as powerful as arrows, he wouldn't fight. The one with the powerful weapons, he would take on a lesser weapon to fight with him, because so much was in the chivalry of it. These were warriors. They had a particular spirit. So when that spirit was betrayed by running from the battlefield, another kshatriya, another warrior, he would not kill him. It would be a loss of his prestige. Not like in today when people will kill anyone at any time. People someone will break into an old lady's house and beat her or something like that, or kill unarmed people, old men, ladies, children. Insane. There's no spirit involved. It is just horrible murder. Animals, basically. Animals, just like a cat. He'll catch a mouse. He's so much bigger than the mouse. Big cat, big claws, big teeth. What does a mouse have to defend himself? Nothing. All he can do is run. So a cat will catch him, and then he'll kill him heartlessly. An animal. Animals can't help but acting like that, but human beings, at least theoretically, if they are actually human beings, can. So nowadays, as Prabhupada says in such heavy terms in so many places, that the human beings, so-called human beings, is a product of the humanism and atheism and materialism that's so strongly spreading, have become more or less just like animals. So Vritrasura properly chastised the demonic, the demigods as well. We'll read half of Prabhupada's purport to text 4. Vritrasura rebuked both the demigods and the demoniac soldiers, because the demons were running in fear of their lives. That means they lacked the fixedness and knowledge that they were not the body, but they were eternal. That's what the cause of fear is. And the demigods also were being chastised by him. The demigods were being chastised because they were killing them from behind. The actions of both were abominable. When a fight takes place, the opposing parties must be prepared to fight like heroes. A hero never runs from the field of battle. He always fights face to face, determined to gain victory or lay down his life in the fight. That is heroic. Killing an enemy from behind is also inglorious. When an enemy turns his back and runs in fear of his life, he should not be killed. This is the etiquette of military science. Text 5. O insignificant demigods, Vritrasura continues, if you truly have faith in your heroism, if you have patience in the cores of your hearts, and if you are not ambitious for sense gratification, so you're such great heroes, you want to show your heroism and your victorious spirit, so you're shooting these demons who are running. But now you will have the chance to show your heroic spirit, because please stand before me for a moment. Prabhupada's purport. Rebuking the demigods, Vritrasura challenged, O demigods, if you are actually heroes, stand before me now, and try to show your prowess. If you do not wish to fight, if you are afraid of losing your lives, I shall not kill you, for unlike you, I am not so evil-minded as to kill a person who are neither heroic nor willing to fight. If you have faith in your heroism, please stand before me. Sukadeva Goswami said, Vritrasura, the angry and most powerful hero, terrified the demigods with his stout and strongly built body. When he roared like with a resounding voice, nearly all living entities fainted. When all the demigods heard Vritrasura's tumultuous roar, which resembled that of a lion, they fainted and fell to the ground as if struck by a thunderbolt. As the demigods closed their eyes in fear, Vritrasura, taking up his trident and making the earth tremble with his great strength, trampled the demigods beneath his feet on the battlefield the way a mad elephant tramples hollow bamboos in the forest. So he was so powerful. Seeing Vritrasura's disposition, Indra, the king of heaven, became intolerant. He became angry so much. And he threw at him one of his great clubs, which are extremely difficult to counteract. However, as the club flew towards him, Vritrasura easily caught it with his left hand. O king, forget, Sukadeva Goswami speaking, the powerful Vritrasura, the enemy of King Indra, angrily struck the head of Indra's elephant with that club. So that very same club, gada, that was a weapon that was to be used to harm Vritrasura. Vritrasura effortlessly caught that. And he attacked Indra and his elephant, hitting his elephant with his head with the club, making a tumultuous sound on the battlefield, the sound of the striking club. For this heroic deed, the soldiers on both sides glorified him. Struck with the club by Vritrasura, like a mountain struck by a thunderbolt, the elephant Airavata, feeling great pain and spitting blood from its broken mouth, was pushed back 14 yards. In great distress, the elephant fell with Indra on its back. So the elephant was a great warrior elephant. Sometimes animals have that kind of spirit too. There's a famous horse called Chetak, who used to fight with. He was a warrior horse, and he was one of the kings. Who was the king who used to ride him? Started with a P. So he would ride him in battle, and the horse would fight too. He would rear up. He would even attack elephants. He was very bold, this horse. So this Aravata was a warrior elephant, practically, Indra's carrier. But when he was struck by the club thrown by Indra at Vritrasura, and Vritrasura caught it and hit him with it, he was driven back 14 yards by that man. His mouth was all bloody and broken. So the elephant fell in great distress with Indra on its back. When he saw Indra's carrier elephant thus fatigued and injured, and when he saw Indra morose because his carrier had been harmed in that way, and Indra was also afraid because he had thrown his weapon, the club, at Vritrasura in battle, and it didn't affect him at all, rather he just caught it. So Indra was very morose, and he saw that his carrier had been harmed. The great soul Vritrasura, following religious principles, refrained from again striking Indra with the club. Taking this opportunity, so he didn't continue the attack because his enemy was down. Taking this opportunity, Indra touched the elephant with his nectar-producing hand, thus relieving the animal's pain and curing its injuries. Then the elephant and Indra both stood silently. O king, when the great hero Vritrasura saw Indra, his enemy, the killer of his brother, who did he kill? Who had Indra killed? Visharup. Visharup's father was Tvastra. Tvastra performed the sacrifice that created Vritrasura, so they were brothers. So when Vritrasura saw Indra, his enemy, the killer of his brother, standing before him with a thunderbolt in his hand, that thunderbolt was specifically created to kill this Vritrasura. It was so powerful, it was infused with Lord Narayan's own power, made from the incredibly powerful bones of the Dichi Muni. And Indra was standing there with that thunderbolt in his hand, desiring to fight. Vritrasura remembered how Indra had cruelly killed his brother. Thinking of Indra's sinful activities, he became mad with lamentation and forgetfulness. Laughing sarcastically, he spoke as follows. Now, there's some verses here. And Vritrasura is going to very, very disparagingly speak to and about Indra. And he's going to very disdainfully speak to him. In 14 he says, Sri Vritrasura said, he who has killed a brahmana, that was his brother Vishwarupa, he who has killed his spiritual master, his brother Vishwarupa, indeed, he who has killed my brother is now, by good fortune, standing before me face to face as my enemy. O most abominable one, when I pierce your stone-like heart with my trident, I shall be freed from my debt to my brother. So he's speaking to him so heavily for a particular reason. Because he knows that Indra had prayed to Lord Narayan for a weapon, for the ability, for even for Lord Narayan himself to incarnate for the purpose of killing Vritrasura. And he knows that Lord Narayan had come to Indra and he had told him how to make a weapon that was so powerful, this Vajra, that Vritrasura would be killed. Therefore, Vritrasura knew that Lord Narayan, who was actually his lord, even though he was on the side of the demoniac, the demons, the asuras, and even though he was acting as if Indra's enemy, he wasn't at all Indra's enemy, as we will hear in later chapters. Actually, he was a great, great devotee. Jiva Goswami, in one of the Sandarbhas, he uses the example of Vritrasura to show that bhakti or devotion for Krishna is so powerful, it can appear, and independent, it can appear anywhere. Even within Vritrasura, who is a demon. So when bhakti appears, regardless of where it appears, even in a demonic body, even in one with a demonic body, then that person is accepted as a devotee. So Vritrasura knew that because Lord Narayan had sanctioned this Vajra being made from the Dichi's bones, that meant that Lord Narayan had sanctioned his death. So he knew that he was going to die. But because he was a devotee, he had no fear, because that death meant release from the material tabernacle and his going to the spiritual world. So therefore, in that sense, he wanted to die. He wanted to rejoin his Lord Shankarshan in the spiritual world. So therefore, although he was chastising Indra so heavily, as if he was going to kill Indra, and as if that was his determination to kill Indra, his actual purpose in all these words was, even though they're true, was to inflame Indra's anger and make Indra so angry, because Indra was actually afraid at this point, that because Vritrasura was so powerful, he had thrown his club, and Vritrasura treated it as if it was completely insignificant, and actually even hurt Aravata, the elephant, with that same club, that same weapon. So Vritrasura wanted to inflame Indra's anger so that he would fight him and use that Vajra, which was empowered with the energy of Lord Narayan, and would kill him. So he wanted to get Indra very angry, so he's speaking in this way. So he says, "He who has killed my brother, O abominable one, when I pierce your stone-like heart," because your heart is so stone-like, you killed my brother, he was my brother, but he was your guru. He had helped you so much, Vishwarupa. He had given you the Narayan Kavacha weapon. You have no mercy in your heart. Your heart is like stone. Now, so he's criticizing him in this way. Text 15. And then he says, "I shall be freed from my debt to my brother." Only more criticism to get Indra angry. "Only for the sake of living in the heavenly planets, you killed my elder brother, a self-realized, sinless, qualified Brahmin who had been appointed your chief priest. He was your spiritual master, but although you entrusted him with the performance of your sacrifice, you later mercifully severed his head from his body, the way one butchers an animal." So Vishwarupa was so powerful. He was performing his duty properly. He was giving you the potency, the power to defeat the demons. He didn't offend you. He was performing the sacrifices. He was a brahmana. He trusted you. He believed that you would treat him properly. But you were so cruel that you cut all his heads off. Vishwarupa was so powerful, he had 3 heads. All of them he cut off so he would die. So Vishwarupa would die. And why did Indra do this? Just because he was so attached to living in the heavenly planet Swarga. For his own pleasure, he was ready to cause others so much displeasure. So Vritrasura very pointed these very harsh words, true and harsh words, at Indra. True, but because Indra is so powerful, he can't be judged as an ordinary man, actually. He is an Ishwara. So these things, like a child, when a child sees his father or mother do something, when he's a young child, he may think he's doing this and he's doing that, but actually the young child can't understand the mood and mentality of the parents. His own brain is so immature, so he can't understand his parents, who were practically higher beings compared to him. So similarly, we cannot actually judge Indra, but yet Vritrasura was pointing out these externally seeming faults to Indra to make Indra very disturbed, so he would fight. And also to point, when we read this, we see that we are more or less like that. We'll do anything to keep our enjoyment intact, and when someone or something gets in the way of our pleasures, they become our enemy in our minds, and we'll do anything to them, even cut off their heads if we can get away with it. Text 16. Indra, Vritrasura continues, "You are bereft of all shame, mercy, glory, and good fortune. Deprived of these good qualities by the reactions of your fruitive activities, you are to be condemned even by the man-eaters, the Rakshasas. Now I shall pierce your body with my trident, and after you die with great pain, even fire will not touch you. Only the vultures will eat your body." So even the Rakshasas, who are low. They eat people. They eat humans. They're so considered so low, they don't kill their guru like you have done, he's saying. And you'll be suffering because the vultures will eat your body. Because when one dies, if one's body is burned properly with proper ritualistic ceremonies in the funeral pyre, then one is purified of one's sins and one is elevated. So Vishwasura is saying, not only are you going to suffer when I kill you, but because you have committed this sinful activity in your next life, you're going to suffer as well, because I won't let your body be burned. It will be eaten by vultures. You are naturally cruel. So Indra may be thinking that, Vritrasura, you're saying that you're going to kill me, but I have so many armies and they are all powerful. Do you think that you're going to actually be able to kill us all? So Vritrasura says in text 17, Indra, you are naturally cruel. If the other demigods, unaware of my prowess, follow you by attacking me with raised weapons, I shall sever their heads with this sharp trident. With those heads, I shall perform a sacrifice to Bhairava, a demigoddess, and the other leaders of the ghosts, along with their hordes. Now, he's going to change his mode over here. Because he's so heavy, and he's so powerful, so much more powerful than anyone there. He becomes somewhat afraid that if I speak like this, Indra may become so terrified. He may not become angry. He just may become terrified. He might run from the battle. And I don't want that. I want him to fight me. I want him to use his Vajra, the empowered Vajra, and I want him to kill me. So he changes his tact to encourage Indra still further. And he says, but if in this battle you cut off my head with your thunderbolt and kill my soldiers, O Indra, O great hero, I shall take great pleasure in offering my body to other living entities, such as the jackals and vultures. I shall thus be relieved of my obligations to the reactions of my karma, and my fortune will be to receive the dust from the lotus feet of great devotees like Narada Muni. So now he's going to actually start to reveal who he actually is and the depth of his devotion. Now here's Prabhupada's purport, a very wonderful purport. Srila Narottama Das Thakur sings, Ichaya Gosani Yaramoy Taro Das Tan sabara para renu mora panchagras. I am the servant of the six Goswamis, and the dust of their lotus feet provides my five kinds of food. A Vaishnava always desires the dust of the lotus feet of previous acharyas and Vaishnavas. Vritrasura was certain that he would be killed in the battle with Indra, because this was the desire of Lord Vishnu. He was prepared for death because he knew that after his death he was destined to return home back to Godhead. This is a great destination, and it is achieved by the grace of a Vaishnava. Chadaya Vaishnava Seva Nishtara Paecha Keva. No one has ever gone back to Godhead without being favored by a Vaishnava. In this verse, therefore, we find the words Manisvinim Padaraja Papatsye. I shall receive the dust of the lotus feet of great devotees. The word Manasvinam refers to great devotees who always think of Krishna. They are always peaceful thinking of Krishna, and therefore they are called Dhira. The best example of such a devotee is Narada Muni. If one receives the dust of the lotus feet of a Manusvi, a great devotee, he certainly returns home back to Godhead. So Vritrasura, his mood, so different from Indra's. It's even that if my body dies now, it is so big and powerful, it will become the food for so many living entities. So many living entities will benefit from my death. So he's happy to die in that way. Complete detachment from the body. This is actually possible. We heard of Didichi Muni in the last chapter, who through yoga practice completely experienced himself as different from his body. Then through yoga practice, he separated himself from his body, and he actually even left his body through yogic practice. And on the other hand, we see that people, and even Indra, as the prayers of Prabhupada's purport and the prayers that Indra was offering, and then the Lord's response to that was showing, this Sakam devotee, he has desires centered around himself, his body, and his family. So that bodily attachment is actually condemned. And here, even a demon, where bhakti is alive and flourishing, is demonstrating complete detachment from the body. We saw this in the fourth canto, where king after king, Prithumaraj, and even in the story of Paranjana, in Paranjana's next life, king of Vidarbha goes to the forest. Complete detachment, leaving the body behind and going to the spiritual world. So this depth of realization is actually required. Otherwise, at the time of death, we will become terrified, clinging to things of this world, clinging uselessly to things of this world, because we can't keep anything. We'll lose everything when we leave this body. We have to die. It's unstoppable. It's the law of nature. The soul must leave the body. But if we have attachments to the body, they will cause us so much distress when it is time to depart, to die. And they will cause us to take birth again within another material body. But on the other hand, if somehow or another we develop the fortune of attachment to Krishna, not to the body, but attachment to Krishna, then when we leave the body, tapva deham ampuna jam naitimam sa iti arjuna, Krishna explains, we'll go back to Godhead. Janma naiti. Not 80, not again birth. So how is that done? How is that attachment to Krishna developed? Prabhupada is explaining in his purport. This manisvanim gives the clue. It means the great devotees. That one has to gain the shelter, the pleasure, the blessings of great devotees, the dust of their lotus feet. And if one gains that, then one will go back home, back to Godhead. So how is great devotee defined? Manisvi, what does that mean? It means one who is always thinking of Krishna. Anukulena, favorably, lovingly, in the mood of Bhagavad Dharma, in the mood of service to Krishna. Oh Krishna, what can I do to please you? So, and so surrendered. So look at Vritrasura's surrender. He understood he was fighting. While he was fighting with Indra, he understood that this vajra, this weapon that Indra has, practically speaking, has been organized by Lord Narayan, by Vishnu, my Lord. So therefore, if it's his desire that I die, okay. So I'll accept that. So what incredibly surrendered consciousness this Vritrasura had. Text 19. He continues. O king of the demigods, Suresh Kazman Hinosi Vajram Puras Titevarini Maya Amogam. Amogam means infallible, sinless, infallible. Masama Ishta Nagadeva Vajra Syan Nisfalar Pipanar Teva Yajna. O king of the demigods, since I, your enemy, am standing before you, why don't you hurl your thunderbolt at me? Although your attack upon me with your club was certainly useless, like a request of money from a miser, the thunderbolt you carry will not be useless. You need have no doubt about this. Here's Prabhupada's purport. When King Indra threw his club at Vritrasura, Vritrasura caught it in his left hand and retaliated by using it to strike his head. Thus, Indra's attack was a disastrous failure. Indeed, Indra's elephant was injured and thrown back 14 yards. Therefore, even though Indra stood with the thunderbolt to hurl against Vritrasura, he was doubtful, thinking that the thunderbolt might also fail. Vritrasura, however, being a Vaishnava, assured Indra that the thunderbolt would not fail, for Vritrasura knew that it had been prepared in accordance with the instructions of Lord Vishnu. Although Indra had doubts because he could not understand that Lord Vishnu's order never fails, Vritrasura understood Lord Vishnu's purpose. Vritrasura was eager to be killed by the thunderbolt manufactured according to Lord Vishnu's instructions, because he was sure that he would thus return home back to Godhead. He was simply waiting for the opportunity of the thunderbolts being released. In effect, therefore, Vritrasura told Indra, if you want to kill me, since I am your enemy, take this opportunity. Kill me. You will gain victory, and I will go back to Godhead. Your deed will be equally beneficial for both of us. Do it immediately. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on this verse saying the words of Vritrasura mean, as you want to remain alive and enjoy Swargaloka, heaven, I want to give up this body to obtain service to the lotus feet of Lord Hari. If you kill me, both our purposes will be fulfilled when I die. And Indra, of course, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, is afraid. What happens if my vajra, my weapon, my thunderbolt weapon, fails as did my club weapon? And Vritrasura's reply in this verse is, don't doubt. Your vajra is a moga. The verse is used in this verse, a moga. It is infallible, and it cannot be without its effect. Text 20. Now, why can't the vajra not fail? Why must it be successful? Why must it have the power to kill this incredibly powerful Vritrasura? So text 20, Vritrasura will answer that question. O Indra, King of Heaven, the thunderbolt you carry to kill me has been empowered by the prowess of Lord Vishnu and the strength of Dadichi's austerities. Since you have come here to kill me in accordance with Lord Vishnu's order, there is no doubt that I shall be killed by the release of your thunderbolt. Lord Vishnu has sided with you. Therefore, your victory, opulence, and all good qualities are assured. So he's calling Indra Sakra. Shakra. Prabhupada translated as, oh, Indra. Shakra means Satakratu. It means one who has performed 100 horse sacrifices. So he's reminding him of his great power. So here's Prabhupada's purport. Vritrasura not only assured King Indra that the thunderbolt was invincible, but also encouraged Indra to use it against him as soon as possible. Vritrasura was eager to die with the stroke of the thunderbolt sent by Lord Vishnu, so that he could immediately return home back to Godhead. By hurling the thunderbolt, Indra would gain victory and enjoy the heavenly planets, remaining in the material world for repeated birth and death. Indra wanted to gain victory over Vritrasura and thereby become happy, but that would not at all be happiness. The heavenly planets are just below Brahmaloka, but as stated by the Supreme Lord, Krishna, a Brahma Bhuvanal Loka Puna Arvatuna Arjuna. Even if one achieves Brahmaloka, he must still fall to the lower planetary systems again and again. However, if one goes back to Godhead, he never returns to this material world. By killing Vritrasura, Indra would not actually gain. He would remain in the material world. Vritrasura, however, would go to the spiritual world. Therefore, victory was destined for Vritrasura, not for Indra. So actually, as Prabhupada is explaining, Krishna seems to have blessed Indra for victory. But who is actually going to be victorious? Indra will gain heaven by killing Vritrasura and enjoy, but eventually have to come down again to a life of suffering. And Vritrasura would go to serve Krishna with loving devotion in the spiritual world. So who is actually going to be the victor in this? Who actually is Krishna favoring by having arming Indra with this thunderbolt weapon? So therefore, as Prabhupada explains in the last line of the purport, victory was destined for Vritrasura, not for Indra. He continues. Text 21. By the force of your thunderbolt, Now the question that the acharyas put in between these verses, or the mood of Indra, is you're encouraging me to use my thunderbolt, but then just as you showed your prowess when I used my club on you, you will show your prowess when I use my thunderbolt and you will defeat me. And Vritrasura's reply is, no, that is not my idea, to show my prowess and defeat you. My idea is, when you use your thunderbolt, is to think of Krishna. So text 21, responding to that doubt of Indra's, that you will defeat me, my thunderbolt weapon, he says, Vritrasura says, by the force of your thunderbolt, I shall be freed of material bondage and shall give up this body and this world of material desires. Fixing my mind upon the lotus feet of Lord Shankarshan, I shall attain the destination of such great sages as Narada Muni, just as Lord Shankarshan has said. Prabhupada's purport. The word aham samadhaya mana indicate that the most important duty at the time of death is to concentrate one's mind. If one can fix his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, Vishnu, Shankarshan, or any Vishnu Murti, his life will be successful. To be killed while fixing his mind at the lotus feet of Shankarshan, Vritrasura asked Indra to release his Vajra, or thunderbolt. He was destined to be killed by the thunderbolt given by Lord Vishnu. There was no question of its being baffled. Therefore, Vritrasura requested Indra to release the thunderbolt immediately, and he prepared himself by fixing his mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. A devotee is always ready to give up his material body, which is described herein as gramya pash, the rope of material attachment. The body is not at all good. It is simply a cause of bondage to the material world. Unfortunately, even though the body is destined for destruction, fools and rascals invest all their faith in the body and are never eager to return home back to Godhead. And the final verse we'll read today, 22. Vrishasura continues. Persons who fully surrender to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and always think of His lotus feet are accepted and recognized by the Lord as His own personal assistants or servants. The Lord never bestows upon such servants the brilliant opulences of the upper, lower, and middle planetary systems of this material world. In other words, the result that comes from devotional service, if one actually has the mood of service to God, is not material enjoyment, not being placed anywhere within the material world. Rather, when one possesses material opulences in any of these three divisions of the universe, his possessions naturally increases enmity, anxiety, mental agitation, pride, and belligerence. Thus one goes through much endeavor to increase and maintain his possessions, and he suffers great unhappiness when he loses them. So my Lord, he knows the Lord will never give him that. Rather, he's going to explain what he really wants, and that is the Lord's service in the spiritual world. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The bad, negative effects of gaining just the kind of things that we always long for. What do we long for? Material happiness in the form of so many material situations and articles and items of sense gratification. Yehi samsparta bhoga dukkha yona yevate. These things are actually the cause of misery, not happiness. And they are obstacles, stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. So therefore he's saying that the Lord will not give them to me. He's giving them to you because that's your desire, he tells Indra. But for me, they're not my desire. I desire just your service. Here's Prabhupada's purport. In Bhagavad Gita 4.11, the Lord says, Yeyatam mam prapadyante tam stuktaiva bhajamyaham manavartante manushya parta sarvasha. As devotees surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Prita. Both Indra and Vrishasura were certainly devotees of the Lord, although Indra took instructions from Vishnu to kill Vrishasura. The Lord was actually more favorable to Vrishasura because after being killed by Indra's thunderbolt, Vrishasura would go back to Godhead, whereas the victorious Indra would rot in this material world. Because both of them were devotees, the Lord awarded them the respective benedictions they wanted. Vrishasura never wanted material possessions, for he knew very well the nature of such possessions. To accumulate material possessions, one must labor very hard, and when he gets them, he creates many enemies because the material world is always full of rivalry. If one becomes rich, his friends or relatives are envious. For Ekanta Bhaktis, unalloyed devotees, Krishna, therefore, never provides material possessions. A devotee sometimes needs some material possessions for preaching, but the possessions of a preacher are not like those of a kami. A kami's possessions are achieved as a result of karma, but those of a devotee are arranged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead just to facilitate his devotional activities. Because a devotee never uses material possessions for any purpose other than the service of the Lord, the possessions of a devotee are not to be compared to those of a kami. Okay, we'll stop here. I think we'll be able to have a class on Wednesday, and if Krishna allows, we'll finish this chapter. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Very heavy devotee, Vrishasura, very realized. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhakti.